All right, ready to dive deep into the world of shear heat in injection molding. Got some really cool sources here, and you might be surprised by how much this invisible force like shapes the stuff we use every day.
It's kind of wild when you think about it. I mean, we're talking about everything from like intricate Legos to how tough a water bottle is, even, you know, critical parts in medical devices.
Yeah, it's easy to just, you know, use those things without a second thought. I'm guessing there's a lot more to it than we realize. So let's break it down. Why is shear heat actually a good thing in this whole injection molding process?
Okay, well, think about what happens to honey, right? When you heat it up, it flows way easier, yeah. Shear heat is kind of like doing that for plastic. So as the plastic's being pushed through the mold, the friction creates heat, which in turn lowers the viscosity. And that's what lets it fill even the most like super detailed mold cavities. That's how we get those crazy designs you see in so many products.
So it's like shear heat is the secret weapon for making like those tiny details.
Yeah.
But I'm curious, does it also affect how strong the plastic itself is?
Oh, absolutely. Shear heat can actually make the plastic stronger. Okay, so here's the thing. As the plastic flows under shear, the polymer chains inside, they start to line up in the direction of the flow. This alignment, we call it anisotropy, increases the strength in that specific direction. Kind of like how wood is stronger along the grain. It's pretty fascinating how this, you know, seemingly simple force can change the material's properties so much.
Okay, so we've got intricate designs and it's stronger. Are there any other perks to shear heat? Starting to sound kind of like a miracle worker here.
Uh-huh. Well, there's one more benefit that's worth mentioning. It has to do with the surface of the molded part. Shear heat can actually make it smoother and more aesthetically pleasing, you know? Like it gives the plastic a little spa treatment.
Wow, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
But if shear heat is doing all these amazing things, you know, giving us intricate designs, stronger plastics, and smoother finishes, well, why are we even talking about it? Got to be a catch, right?
Yeah, there's always a catch, right? Like too much of a good thing and all that. Too much shear heat can actually break down the plastic molecules, which, you know, weakens the product, could even lead to defects.
So it's all about balance then, like walking a tightrope between enough heat and too much.
Exactly. Think about polyethylene, which is in, well, tons of products. Too much heat and it can turn yellow and brittle. Not good.
Ah, so that's why some plastic stuff feels flimsy or breaks easily. Too much heat during the molding process.
That's exactly it. And that's where it gets tricky for manufacturers. They're always trying to make things faster and more efficient, but they got to control the heat at the same time. It's like a constant push and pull between making more stuff and making sure it's actually good.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm starting to see why controlling this invisible force is a big deal. But how do manufacturers actually keep shear heat in check? What kind of tools or techniques are we talking about?
Well, there are a few key strategies, and it all starts with knowing the material inside and out. Some plastics are just way better at handling heat than others.
So it's like choosing the right clothes for the weather. You wouldn't wear a wool sweater in summer.
Uh-huh. Yeah, perfect analogy. Choosing a plastic that can handle higher temperatures without, you know, falling apart is super important.
Makes sense. So what else do they do to manage this heat?
Well, one of the most powerful tools they have is computer-aided engineering. We call it CAE.
CAE. Sounds pretty high tech.
It is, but it's also incredibly useful. Imagine being able to simulate, you know, the whole injection molding process virtually before you even make a physical mold.
Wow. So you can see exactly how the plastic will flow, where the heat's going to be highest, and catch any problems before they happen.
Yep. That's the idea. The software can simulate the melt flow, predict the shear rates in different parts of the mold, and even flag potential defects, like maybe warping from uneven cooling.
That's wild.
Huh.
Like having a crystal ball for injection molding. But does every manufacturer use this CAE? Is it like widely available?
It's becoming more common for sure, but not everyone has access to it or the, you know, the expertise to use it effectively. It's a pretty big investment. But the payoff in terms of making the process better and avoiding costly mistakes, it's huge.
Yeah, sounds like a real game changer if you can use it right.
Totally.
So we've got smart material choices and this super cool CAE tech. Anything else up their sleeve?
Well, the cooling system's a big one. Remember, shear heat comes from friction, so cooling the plastic down quickly after it's injected into the mold, essential. Like quenching a hot piece of metal, you know, got to cool it down fast to avoid damage.
So how do they actually cool it down inside the mold? It's like a mini fridge built right in.
Haha. Well, not exactly a mini fridge, but you're on the right track. Injection molds usually have cooling channels built into them. So coolant flows through these channels, and that absorbs the extra heat from the plastic as it cools and hardens.
Okay, so it's like a network of vanes inside the mold, helping to keep the temperature just right.
Yeah, that's a great way to picture it. And where you put these channels, how they're designed, it all has a huge impact on the final product. If the cooling isn't uniform, you can end up with all sorts of problems like uneven shrinkage, warping, even those little sink marks you sometimes see on the surface.
So it's not just about cooling it down, it's about cooling it down evenly.
You got it. Another one of those balancing acts. Too slow and the plastic might warp, too fast, and you get those surface defects.
It's crazy how each step is so connected to the next.
It really is. And honestly, we haven't even gotten into some of the more nuanced aspects of shear heat, like how it affects the dimensions of the part or that anisotropy thing we touched on where the plastic is stronger in one direction than another.
I'm definitely feeling a lot more informed about shear heat now, but I'm also realizing just how much more there is to learn. Ready to dive even deeper.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We've only scratched the surface, ready to dig into some of those more nuanced aspects.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You mentioned something about dimensional stability and anisotropy earlier. Those sound kind of important.
Let's start with dimensional stability. It's all about making sure the molded part, you know, keeps its shape and size over time, even under different conditions. We don't want our Legos warping or our water bottles shrinking after they're made.
Right, that makes sense. But how does shear heat play into that? They seem like two separate things.
Well, remember how shear heat affects the flow of the plastic during injection? That flow can actually create like internal stresses within the part, almost like tension or pressure trapped inside the plastic.
So different parts of the molded piece could be experiencing different levels of stress, depending on how the plastic flowed into the mold.
Exactly. And if those stresses aren't handled right, they can make the part warp or distort over time, even after it's cooled down.
So like, imagine a plastic gear, right? If it's molded with uneven cooling, that could lead to warping, and then the gear wouldn't work properly.
Exactly. Even a tiny warp could mess things up. It might not mesh right with other gears, could lead to wear and tear, noise, even, you know, total failure.
Okay, so managing these internal stresses is key for dimensional stability.
Mm.
How do manufacturers actually do that?
It all goes back to that balance we've been talking about. By carefully controlling things like the injection pressure, the melt temperature, how long it cools, they can minimize those stresses and make sure the part holds its shape.
It's like a chef, right? Adjusting the oven temp, cooking time, ingredients to get the perfect dish.
Perfect analogy. It takes a lot of experience and know-how. You got to understand the material and the process.
Speaking of understanding the material, you also mentioned something called anisotropy.
Mm-hmm.
What exactly is that, especially in relation to shear heat?
Anisotropy is basically how a material's properties can be different depending on the direction. Like, wood is stronger along the grain than across it, right?
Okay, so you're saying plastic can be stronger in one direction than another, mm-hmm. and shear heat is somehow involved in that.
Remember how we talked about the polymer chains lining up in the direction of flow because of shear heat? Well, that alignment can actually create weak spots in other directions, perpendicular to the flow.
So making it stronger in one direction might actually make it weaker in another.
That's exactly it. And this anisotropy thing can have a huge impact on how well the product performs, especially under stress.
So if you were designing a plastic bottle cap, for example, you'd need to think about more than just how strong the plastic is overall. You'd need to consider how it might behave when it's twisted or squeezed.
Exactly. You want the cap to be strong enough to handle being screwed on and off, but it also can't collapse if you squeeze it from the sides.
Wow, this is really making me think about all the different ways shear heat can impact the final product. It's like a whole hidden world of forces shaping the things we use every day.
It is a fascinating world, and we're just scratching the surface here. We haven't even talked about how shear heat affects how efficient the whole injection molding process is.
Oh, right. We talked about manufacturers always trying to balance speed and quality. How does shear heat fit into that?
Think about it this way. Shear heat can actually speed up the injection molding process. Since it makes the plastic flow easier, you can inject it faster. And that means shorter cycle times, more products, and lower costs.
So shear heat's kind of like a double-edged sword. You want to use it to make things faster, but you also got to keep it in check to avoid problems and make sure the quality is good.
Exactly. It's all about finding that sweet spot, just like we've been saying.
So how do manufacturers find that balance between speed and quality when it comes to shear heat? What strategies do they use?
Well, Like we said before, it all starts with really understanding the material. Some plastics are much more sensitive to heat than others, so that's the first thing you got to know.
So back to choosing the right tool for the job, like the clothes and weather analogy.
You got it. But it's not just about choosing the right material, it's about knowing how that material is going to react under shear.
What do you mean by react under shear? Do different plastics actually act differently when they're exposed to this heat?
Oh, for sure. Some plastics melt really smoothly and evenly under shear, while others might become, you know, unstable and prone to defects.
So it's like choosing a dance partner. You want someone who can keep up with you and move gracefully, not someone who's going to step all over your feet.
Haha, that's a great way to put it. And just like with dancing, experience plays a big role. Skilled operators can tweak the process based on the material, the mold, and what the product needs to be like.
It's a mix of science and art, then.
Definitely. And luckily, there are some pretty cool technological advancements that can help. We've already talked about CAE, but there are also really sophisticated monitoring and control systems that can maintain the right shear heat levels throughout the entire process.
It's like having a whole team of digital assistants keeping an eye on things and making sure everything's running smoothly.
Yeah, that's a great way to think about it. These systems can spot even the tiniest deviations from the ideal settings and make adjustments in real time to keep everything in check.
This is all so incredibly fascinating. It really shows you how complex something we take for granted really is.
And we haven't even touched on the environmental implications yet.
Oh, right. Sustainability is such a big deal these days. How does shear heat factor into that?
Well, remember how we talked about shear heat sometimes causing defects and wasted material? If a manufacturer isn't careful, they could end up with a lot of scrap, which just ends up in landfills.
So making the process as efficient as possible and avoiding those defects isn't just about saving money, it's about being environmentally responsible too.
Exactly. And it goes beyond just waste. Think about how shear heat affects how strong and durable a product is.
Right. You mentioned those aligned polymer chains make the plastic stronger in the direction of flow.
Right. So if you can make a stronger, more durable product, it's going to last longer, which means people won't need to replace it as often. And that directly reduces consumption and waste in the long run.
So mastering this whole shear heat thing isn't just about making a good-looking product that works well. It's about making a product that's better for the environment.
That's a great way to sum it up. It shows how even seemingly small details in the manufacturing process can have a big impact, an impact that reaches far beyond the factory.
Wow, we've really gone deep on this shear heat thing. It's amazing how something so, like, basic can have such a big impact, not just on, you know, how good the product is, but also the whole sustainability and efficiency thing.
It really shows you how connected everything is, huh?
Yeah.
Like from the tiny molecules in the plastic to the, you know, the global impact of making stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty mind-blowing. Mm. You mentioned earlier we haven't even talked about real-world examples, so we're ready to see how all this plays out in the stuff we actually use.
Okay, let's start with something everyone's familiar with, a plastic water bottle.
Seems simple enough, but I bet there's more to it than meets the eye.
You bet. Think about the neck of the bottle, right? It's pretty narrow. Getting that molten plastic to flow through there and fill the whole mold, that takes a very precise amount of shear heat. Too little, and the plastic might not reach all the nooks and crannies, you'd end up with a wonky bottle. Too much, and you risk degrading the plastic, which could make the bottle weak, or even affect how the water tastes.
It's that Goldilocks thing again, huh? Not too hot, not too cold.
Exactly. And this applies to tons of products. Think about Legos, for instance. Those little interlocking bricks with all those tiny details, getting them to fit together perfectly, that satisfying click. That all comes down to controlling shear heat really, really precisely.
Never even thought about that. But it makes sense. Those little studs and stuff, that takes a lot of precision.
For sure. It's a real testament to the engineers who figured out how to use this force, this shear heat, to make such intricate stuff, stuff that actually works.
Okay, so water bottles, Legos.
Right.
What about other industries? Give us some more examples.
Okay, how about medical stuff, like implants or surgical instruments? Those things need to be super precise and, you know, biocompatible. Managing shear heat is absolutely essential for that.
Wow, so this stuff we've been talking about is even affecting the medical devices that, you know, help save lives.
Absolutely. And how about cars? They use more and more lightweight plastic parts these days to help with fuel efficiency and the strength and durability of those parts. You guessed it, all comes down to controlling shear heat during molding.
So shear heat's even playing a role in making cars more environmentally friendly.
Exactly. And we can't forget about airplanes. Think about all the high-performance plastics they use in, like, the cabin or even engine parts. Those materials need to withstand some pretty crazy temperatures and pressures. And sheer heat management is a big part of making sure they're reliable.
This has been a real eye-opener. It's amazing how this one concept, sheer heat, is connected to so many different things, from the stuff we use every day to, like, cutting-edge technology.
It really shows you how important it is to understand, the science behind the things we use, the stuff we often take for granted.
Yeah, it makes you appreciate the complexity, all the thought and ingenuity that goes into making these products.
Absolutely. So next time you pick up something made of plastic, take a second to think about, how it was made and how sheer heat played a part in getting it into your hands.
And maybe even share that knowledge with someone else. Spread the word about the amazing science behind the everyday world.
That's what makes these deep dives so cool, right? Uncovering those hidden connections, sparking curiosity.
Well, I think we've reached the end of our sheer heat journey. It's been fascinating.
It has. And remember, there's always more to learn, more connections to make, more to discover out there. Keep asking questions, keep digging deeper, and keep on learning.